Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between. This week we are joined by one of the most exciting American racers around right now, Connor Daly, fresh from scoring his first ever pole position in America's IndyCar Championship with British team Carlin, and he's also enjoying racing with Ed Carpenter Racing too, balancing both drives at the same time. He'll explain how. He's enjoyed massive success in the UK and Europe too. It was an absolute pleasure to be joined by Connor, a race car driver and reality TV star. Thank you so much to you guys as well who continue to download and listen. If you like it, please do leave us a review. It really helps us to get bigger and enjoy.
Welcome to episode 35 of the Motormouth podcast. Before I introduce today's guest, as always, I have to head over to Essex to a man whose father learnt his craft in the medical world from a certain Eric Sidney Watkins OBE, an English neurosurgeon who between 1978 and 2005 was the chief medical officer in Formula One, who was known in the sport affectionately as Prof. When the prof spoke, people listened. And there is where the similarities end, dear listeners. Harry Benjamin, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I had no idea his first name was Eric, so you learn something new every day.
No, I didn't. It's probably wrong because it's from Wikipedia, so don't blame me if I've got that one wrong.
You need to stop using Wikipedia.
I know, yeah. How are you doing? All right?
I am all good. Thank you very much. I've just walked down dinner because it's the evening here in Essex.
Are you still doing your fifth, what's it called, the Joe Wicks thing?
No, I've given up on Joe Wicks. I'm doing Les Mills now, which is an absolute killer. I just did a half an hour thing called Grit, which honestly, I do it every Monday and it doesn't get any easier. I'm hoping I'm going to see some results any day now. So just watch this space. How are you?
It sounds horrible. Yeah, I'm all right. I'm hot, actually. It's been a sort of stuffy kind of day today. But I'm good. Had a nice weekend with the kids. Didn't do an awful lot. Played around in the paddling pool and that sort of thing. But all good, mate. Thank you very much. Well, listen, should we stop dithering and introduce today's guest?
Let's do it.
I've brought in a special theme tune for this one, so I'm just going to hit play on that. Yes, today we're very excited to be joined by yet another of our friends from across the pond. He's a second-generation race car driver who started in karts at 10 years old. By 2005, he'd won 19 races, 2 championships, and Junior Driver of the Year. He's a rising star in the motorsport world and is currently to be found strutting his stuff in IndyCar with Ed Carpenter Racing and British outfit Carlin. It's a joy and a pleasure to have him. Ladies and gents, please welcome Connor Daly to the Motormouth podcast.
Thank you, guys. That was a beautiful intro song. Appreciate that.
Way better than our national anthem.
Yeah, we were slagging off our national anthem before you arrived, and yours is much more stirring.
Got it. Thank you so much for coming on to the Motormouth podcast. Now, we've had a habit since lockdown has sort of started for the world to always asking about how lockdown has been, but we're changing that now because we're desperate to try and get out of that mode. So, in lockdown, people have been looking into e-racing and e-sports. You're big on that as well. Is that how you've been filling the void with no racing?
Yeah, I think that was everyone's outlet, really. I mean, I'm sitting here in what's been hilariously called the Connor Daly Technology Center. Later is just off to my left here. Call of Duty is on in the background currently. Nice. And twisted on this screen over here. So I've got four computer monitors going right now. but yeah, I mean, it was one of those things where we all kind of settled into it. We all left St. Pete, which was our first race, but it got canceled and we all got home. And we're like, well, what do we do now? And I was already like streaming games on Twitch a little bit, but didn't really have a racing simulator set up or anything. So IndyCar then decided, all right, well, we've got a NBC, you know, TV partner. What are we going to do? Well, let's do some online racing. And I was actually blown away that, with the amount of drivers that actually, participated, but no one had anything to do. So I think it went, it was interesting. It was cool. I'm not a big sim racer. Like, I'm not great at sim racing. I will not deny that at all. And I think we kind of proved that as soon as the real racing started again.
So before lockdown, were you not really, you weren't that big into it, or were you just sort of playing it for fun? I suppose you didn't have that much time to do it, did you?
No. And I mean, we do so much like real simulator stuff with our teams, you know, with Chevrolet, that like, that is the gaming part that I like. Cause that's like as close to reality as they can make it. So like, I don't like to come back here and get absolutely stepped all over by a bunch of, you know, incredible people on the internet. So that's why I avoid it. I'm like, look, I don't want to make a fool of myself on the internet more than I have already. So I'm just going to leave the sim racing to the experts and continue to try and jump out of planes in Call of Duty and shoot people on the ground.
Which is very American, let's be honest. Let's go with the shooting. So Connor, obviously racing is in your family. It's no secret your father was a racing driver, obviously, and we'll touch on that more later. Was racing always going to be the route for you? Was there ever anything else?
Well, I mean, it was certainly all that I knew growing up. I mean, my dad retired when I was born, but he went straight into TV broadcasting. So I was always at the racetrack, was always, you know, traveling with my mom and dad, because, you know, I was the first child. So I was always coming along for the ride. And yeah, it was something that I thought was just a heroic act. It was an incredible scene every year at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Obviously, I grew up in Indianapolis and my dad was Irish, but he was fully moved over to America by the time I was born. And it was something that I didn't really think was attainable. I just thought that these guys were born into heroism and it was the greatest thing ever. And you just kind of had to be designated a racing driver at birth. And I didn't know. So, thankfully, a neighbor of ours when I was 10 wanted to go out to the go-kart track and asked my dad to come along. And I went with him and got in a go-kart and realized that this is, it was a lot of fun. But I also wasn't terrible at it. So, the rest was history, but yeah, it was always racing. My mom loves it. My mom worked at the racetrack. My dad loves it. Obviously he was very heavily into it. And then now, you know, my stepfather as well, he's very tied into racing. So everyone that we've got in the family has been involved in racing.
There's no escaping it.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, karting is the logical route that most drivers we talk to, that's how they start. And that is how there seems to be no other way, really, of getting into racing. When you first got into a car and you immediately sort of started performing well, winning, setting records, when was the moment where you or the people around you suddenly thought, hang on a minute, I think this could actually go quite far?
I think it was more when we got into like cars for the first time, like karting, you know, I would say I was okay at karting. Yes. You know, we won some stuff. We were winning some championships, but I always thought that there were some other guys that were like, oh man, like they're winning even more than me. So like, what, you know, do I need to be better at this? But then when I got into cars, my style really related more to cars than go-karts. And when I got in there, sort of things started, it wasn't easier for me, but I adapted to it, I think, much quicker than I expected to. And my driving style fit a car and the more weight than the very small and nimble go-kart. So that's when it really became serious, because we got right into it. I mean, I was 15 and, you know, we were in the national series in the U.S. that was, you know, filled with every aspiring young driver from, you know, North and South America and even Europe as well. You know, that we saw. So it was really cool. And it was great to be a part of that. And, you know, we won it in my rookie year. So it was kind of launching us off into the, you know, stratosphere of car racing. And then it got really serious. I mean, then it's like, all right, we're on a road here where we got to start setting out a path to, you know, where we want to end up, because it's very important to, you know, every step of the way is really important.
And I suppose you at that stage, I guess you were lucky in one sense. I guess it can be hard living under a guy who is a successful racing driver, but on the flip side, you've got someone who can mentor you and perhaps send you down directions that other people wouldn't go and make the right choices. And you even ended up over on our shores, you raced at Silverstone and won, I believe. How did that opportunity come about? And was that your first time racing in Europe?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, when we're growing up over here, we know that, you know, to get to Formula One, you have to go to Europe. Everyone over there pays no attention to what goes on over here. And we know that. That's fine. So when we got every year, there's the Team USA scholarship. It's called Jeremy Shaw, a British fellow himself, has kind of started this for many years ago to give two American drivers a chance to go over and compete in Europe in the Formula Ford Festival and the Walter Hayes Trophy at Silverstone. Two great British tracks with brands and Silverstone. So Joseph Newgarden and I, obviously multiple IndyCar champion now, we were the two drivers selected in 2008. Joseph won the Formula Ford Festival and I won the Walter Hayes Trophy. So a bit of an American sweep there, which was really cool for us at the time. But once we got over there, we realized, all right, you've got one shot at trying to go to Formula One and you got to do it when you're young. So Joseph tried to stay over there for a little bit, but it was really tough for him when it came to budgets and figuring things out. He had to come back to America. And when he came back to America, I went to Europe. So
right.
It was kind of a crossover of sorts. Because I had won another championship here in America, which gave me a scholarship fund to be able to kind of fund my first year in Europe and kind of get things rolling. So it's been a weird road, but, it's ended up all right.
Formula One, the goal.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, once I got to age 17, 18, and I had won all the championships in America that I'd been in so far. You stay on the route to IndyCar, which could have obviously been very profitable. It worked out fantastically for Joseph. I mean, he's driving for the best team in the sport, Roger Penske, and has multiple IndyCar championships already before the age of 30. So, but for me, we had a great opportunity to go over there, with Carlin and learn a lot, become a better driver, and then there was something with Force India at the time that they saw something in me after I kind of got on their simulator a little bit and worked with those guys a little bit to where they signed me to a contract, and so that was super important. There was a big push to try and get American drivers as well. Alexander Rossi was over there, but I will always be so super thankful for what the Force India team saw in me. Otmar and Bob Fernley at the time, those were great guys to deal with, and then they took over kind of my European career from then on, and we came very close to making it over there, but it's obviously a very small group of individuals that do get that chance to be in Formula One. So all good.
You've brushed over, you're obviously a modest guy because you've brushed over some serious success there. So what led to your GP3 and then into GP2, GP3 and GP2 as it was then, back in 2010, you didn't just win Formula Star Mazda Championship. You absolutely destroyed it with 7 wins, 9 poles, 12 podiums, the most laps led, and the largest winning margin in its 23-year history. Astounding results. Was that the year that you thought, okay, I've got this, I'm going to Europe, I can get to Formula One?
Well, I've never thought I've got this, right? Because you can't go into that because it's just not a... I wanted to go to Europe and thinking, all right, I'm going to learn here. I'm going to learn from racing against some of the best in the world. At the time, GP3, I mean, it was 30 cars every race, 3 cars per team, incredible teams, incredible drivers.
On the same tracks as Formula One.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the schedule was fantastic. So, rookie year, obviously, Bottas won the championship. He took me out in the last race at Monza. It was a little bit upsetting. Still hold it against him to this day. But there were such incredible drivers that we were racing against. Mitch Evans, Antonio Felix da Costa, Danny Kvyat, Carlos Sainz. I mean,
that was a hell of a field, actually.
Yeah, amazing, amazing field.
So many drivers.
You look at
most of those guys though as well now. I mean, all of them, literally the top 15 in the championship, I think, all are established paid racing drivers all across the world somewhere. Yeah.
No, it's amazing. Mm. When you came over and first jumped into that competitive GP3 championship, was it as you were expecting? Were you thinking, yeah, this is going to be tough and it's going to be hard to compete? Or was it, did you come over and think, God, this is a bit of a shock. This is tougher than I was expecting.
Well, I think the biggest thing that was interesting for me is at the time I had come over and my first race with Carlin in GP3, my first GP3 race out, you know, we didn't really have a set driver lineup. I was the only driver that was actually signed for the whole year, so I didn't know who my teammates were going to be. And Tom Dillman was my teammate at the time, who's obviously, you know, gone on to be pretty successful in sports cars, Formula E, et cetera. He qualified on pole and I qualified 29th. And I was like, well, how did that happen? And he came back to me, and that was when Pirellis were still, you know, they were a new tire for that series and the series was still new. And he was like, I have no idea. I was like, well, I have no idea why I qualified 29th. And so it was one of those things where it was a very strange tire to get used to. And I think a lot of the drivers that year for sure, and as we kind of kept going, realized that there was a certain driving style that you had to adapt to this tire. And it took me really almost half the season that year to start to figure it out. And then we started finishing more in the points. We started getting closer to the podium, which then thankfully led Force India to signing me and then putting me with ART Grand Prix, which was the championship winning team the next year. And as soon as I got in with that team, it was like, all right, these guys, you know, they'll tell you exactly what you need to be doing this very strict system. Obviously they're French. So it was, you know, it was an interesting environment, but I won the first race of the season. Like I won the first weekend of the season. So it was like, all right, well, that was cool. You know what I mean? We went from like, not a great year the first year to immediately winning and being at the front of the championship and qualifying on pole as well. So like it was pretty cool to kind of go from there to there. And once I won in GP3, then that really boosted my confidence competing over there in general.
Yeah. Moving forward into GP2, plus your first look back at IndyCar. So tell us about the GP2 opportunity, what that was like. How was that step up from GP3 into GP2?
Well, I mean, honestly, like 2013 was kind of the craziest year of my life. That was my last year in GP3. I had to win the championship that year for my contract to continue with Formula One, or well, with Force India Formula One. Mm. And we did. You know, I was leading the championship going into Monza, which is the second to last race of the year. And we got taken out in the first race, which means you start last for the second race. So, you know, I had the best race potentially of my life at the time. Second race.
Is that the Bottas incident or a different one?
No, this is another one. Bottas was year one. Right. Year three was a kid named Dino Zamparelli. I don't know where he is now, but I'll never forget. And we were in a position right there to lead the championship. We had six podiums, I think, already on the year, a win, a pole. I got taken out at Monza. So, you know, race two, we came from 29th to 8th, set fastest lap of the race, but that's 2 points. So, Danny Kvyat had gone to get a lot of points that weekend, and we finished third in the championship. So it was a bit of a shame. And then after that, GP2, I mean, it was, my career had gone straight off a cliff from then on. So, you know, had done an IndyCar race. My first IndyCar race was GP3, testing Formula One, and then completely fell off the horse. So GP2 was, you know, very low budget, crazy operation, tried to show up to some of the races, but it was, you know, the team was back of the grid, great people, honestly, still some of the, you know, great people that I enjoyed working with, but we just didn't have the budget. Yeah. So it was tough that year. GP2 cars were a lot of fun to drive. You know, Saffel van Doorn won the championship that year. Good friend of mine. Still, we play Call of Duty every week. But yeah, it was a tough year, but it kind of got me back to America. And then, focused right back on IndyCar again.
Is that what you needed? Because, you know, most racing drivers always have a really tough part during their careers. It's normally financially related as well. How do you pick yourself back from that? Was it, okay, let's refocus, let's go back home and try and rebuild, let's see what's going on here? How do you recover?
Well, I kind of thought, like, if I ever did go back to IndyCar, like, because of the success we had had in Europe, you know, up against some of the best in the world, that I was like, all right, you know, we'll be able to sign this guy. But it was not like that at all. You know, IndyCar had seemed to have forgotten everything. And there were a bunch of, you know, people that had, you know, budgets and stuff like that. And so it was kind of just like I had to just force my way in. I had to go back to, you know, I was sleeping on people's floors in their hotel rooms at every race just to kind of stay around. You know, I had subbed for an injured driver in 2015. And then that went well. And And then my Indy 500 effort that year, we found a sponsor for, but the car caught on fire before the race even started. So it was like, and then, you know, I subbed for another injured driver, my teammate, James Hinchcliffe at the time, and then led two races in a row and finished sixth in my first road course race there. So it was like, things had started going well. And then I did get signed for 2016, which is great. But it was definitely a full year of 2014 and 15 where I was not full time in anything, and just kind of jumping from place to place, series to series, a bit of a, you know, a gypsy lifestyle, and it worked out.
And how was your mindset at that stage? I mean, were there ever points where you thought, this is it? I can't go on. This is the end of the road.
Well, I can't think of my life without racing at this point. It's almost like, as you know, if I didn't have the chance to drive race cars, I wouldn't know what to do with myself or how I would live. So I was just like, all right, I'm going to do anything, whatever it takes to be at the track, to be, ready to drive at any point. And it did work out. It was a grind and it was terrible. Like, there was times where I was like, this actually sucks.
Yeah.
But, you know, it works out. And now, you know, many years later, four or six years later, again, went through another bumpy road, but I'm back and it was all, you know, worth it. And it's going better now than it ever had.
Well, that's amazing to hear. And what a brilliant story as well. Now, what we like to do to break up the interview for you, Connor, we normally like to play a bit of a game, and it's the hardest quiz in motorsport. Cue music. thank you very much. Now, Connor, this is the hardest quiz in motorsport. We've had over 30 people take part in this. The top of the leaderboard currently looks like this. Good friend Martin Plowman, number one with 13 points.
Someone needs to displace
him. Second, Brendan Hartley. And in third place is Guido van der Garde. That is the top three midfield. 10th place, we're looking at Will Buxton, Sebastian Buemi, David Coulthard. Bottom of the leaderboard with a measly 3.5 is Karun Chandhok. Now, the way this works is I have got some clips for you, and we're going to play them, and they're all related to you and your career, and I'm going to ask you, you're going to listen to them, and then I'm going to ask you some questions. 13 points up for grabs. Let's kick off with clip number one. Have a listen, and then I shall ask you some questions.
Here it comes.
Line here, coming out of the tunnel. Daly goes to the right. Elian Assen goes to the right, so Daly moves to the left. So he goes to cover it. Daly goes to the left. And then Saranovic then moves to the left again. Make the one move.
Make the one move.
Good friend Will Buxton there, commentating. Now, Connor, first of all, can you give us the context of what's happening there?
Absolutely. We'll never forget it. Monaco, GP3, 2012, coming from not a great spot on the grid, trying to fight my way past, absolute idiots. And
fair comment.
I had tagged, old buddy Dimitri, in the rear, in the rear wing just a little bit. And he had no rear wing for a lap. And then try to pass the guy. He's swerving all over the track like he forgot where it went. Or he was drunk. I don't know. I mean, he's Russian, so who knows? It's
probably
Monaco. Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, we tried to go for a braking maneuver, obviously in an overtaking zone out of a tunnel where people try to pass in Monaco. He was going to have none of it. And so I went flying into the ocean almost.
Yeah, it was a pretty mighty crash, but that has got you 3 points on
Excellent
the board.
Start.
So a very positive start. Okay, clip number two, please. Have a listen to this.
Here we go.
It's fantastic. I can't believe I'm here and I won. I owe it all to the Sam Snyder Motorsports team and the Mazda Speed Motorsports Development Program.
That makes me chuckle, this one, because halfway through it, you sort of forget how to speak. It just sort of turns into one.
a bit of an old one from the archives. Now, again, same question. Can you give us the context?
Yeah, Long Beach, 2011, Indy Lights. Joseph Newgarden had put the car in the tire barrier with a few laps to go after I'd lost sixth gear. It was an interesting finish to the race, but got my first Indy Lights win, and we took the lead of the championship.
What a brilliant story to take your first win. And more importantly, it's got you another full 3 points. You are doing very well, Mr. Daly.
Big fan of Indie Lights. It's cool.
We are.
I don't think I've ever heard that clip, by the way.
Haven't you?
It's amazing what YouTube can do. Right, clip number 3, please. Have a listen to this.
Here we go.
But tonight, I become the best IndyCar.
That's all you get.
The best IndyCar. Can you finish your sentence?
Would you like to hear it again?
Have a listen again. It's very quick.
Here we go.
Okay. But tonight, I become the best IndyCar.
I thought you'd get this one straight away.
Tonight, I become the best IndyCar.
Blank.
What?
Tonight, I become the best IndyCar.
Should I give you a clue?
Ninja.
He's got it. How was your experience on... Now, we have Ninja Warrior UK over here, obviously derived from Ninja Warrior.
Yeah, one of our former guests was on it, Charlie Martin. She did it.
But how was it for you? What was your experience like on Ninja Warrior?
Well, they told me I was doing it like 3 weeks before the show, and I was like, cool, so we have no time to train, and it's in between two races. And they're like, yeah, exactly. So... I did exactly one day on a ninja course, and it lasted about 36 seconds on television, and I broke 2 fingers in the process. So it was great.
Nightmare. Shouldn't laugh, really. That's not
a learning experience. Okay, Connor, final clip, and then there's a bonus question for you.
Okay.
Now, this is a bit of a weird one because there's actually no speech in it whatsoever, but here we go.
Now, that might have been a little bit difficult to hear, but do you know what car that is?
Yeah, the Force India Formula One car 2012. That was at an airfield in the United Kingdom. I think it might have been Bruntingthorpe.
Absolutely. Spot on. That must have been a pretty special moment pulling out in that F1 car.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, that whole... The only problem, I still have the gloves. I had the Force India gloves. I was a little bit upset I didn't get a suit, but it was super cool. Those guys, I still talk to my engineer from that day with the team. He still talked to him after every IndyCar race. He's a DTM engineer now for BMW. Really, really, really enjoyed working with those guys.
Was there ever a chance of an F1 opportunity with them?
If I won the GP3 championship, for sure. Part of the next step of the contract was, you know, do some Friday sessions,
right,
and stuff like that. So yeah, the outlook and the outline was there for sure. However, like at the time, there were people also paying like 650,000 euros a day to do the Friday sessions. So like it was a little bit. I was like, well, I don't think I can do that, but
it was mad, isn't it? The finances involved. Okay, well, Connor, this final bonus question for you. If you get this, it's worth 1 point and it puts you right at the top of the leaderboard. If you don't get this, it drops you down.
But Harry, I feel like we should make... I think you've made this too easy.
Too easy?
Yeah, I think you should go one more.
You have to get all of them?
No, okay, one fine. More.
All right. Well, this is your question, Connor. Okay. What teams did your father, Derek Daly, drive for in Formula One?
So Hesketh, Tyrrell, Williams, Theodore, I think that was it. Maybe Candy, Tyrrell, Hesketh. I think I have the car in my basement.
There are two more teams.
There are two more?
Two more. He got around.
He only did 4 years, though. So I was...
Well, this is Wikipedia, so...
And it is the hardest quiz of motorsport because Harry never knows the answers.
You know what, though? I was going to give you a point if you got three regardless, and you've got four. So you're going to get the point anyway. I was looking for Ensign and March.
Yeah, Ensign and March. Yeah, see, March, I was thinking it was just the chassis of one of them, so that was on me.
Okay, fair enough. Well, either way, that gets you the full point. And Connor Daly, you are our new leader in the Monster Mouths podcast.
Yes!
Smashed it.
We'll take it, thank you.
Absolutely smashed it. Martin Plowman will be fuming at that.
Jeez.
Was that a full house? Was that?
That was a full house. 13 out of 13. Spot on.
Thank you. Wow. Appreciate that. That was fun.
What do we do now? Like, he can't be beaten. What do we do? We reset? Thrown me.
I don't know. We'll talk about that. We'll work that one out. We'll do an All-Stars final. Right. Well, thank you very much, Conaday, for playing Motor Mouths. Now, some more questions for you while we have you. When you moved to IndyCar and you full focus on that, is Europe completely out of the question now? Would you ever think about Formula One again?
No, I mean, you can't. It's just not relevant, really. I mean, no team is going to even, the only driver that I would say really deserves a shot at it is probably Joseph Newgarden at the time. I mean, the guy's American, Formula One teams, I really cannot stress this enough. It is very anti-American. You have Haas itself, who is not an even. American team, who that Gunther Steiner literally is the most condescending person ever about American drivers. And I was like, you literally race under the American flag. Mm-hmm. And it's astounding that that is being said. So
why is it? Do you think there haven't been that many successful American drivers, or there haven't been at least consistently in a lot of them?
Well, I mean, there are many reasons. First of all, there's a lack of support from our country, financially. You see a lot of drivers that are literally supported by their countries, and they get the support that they need. I think immediately, Felipe Nasr, his sponsor on his car was Bank of Brazil. You know what I mean? I'm like, well, there you go. You got a lot of drivers with investment behind them that is very large. And we, both Alex and I mean, Alex had a great system, Alexander Rossi. He had a great support system, some great investors that did get him to Formula One. But we're already, looked at as not good enough to be there because of just because of it's for no reason other than like Formula One is Europe's thing. Like it is. That's it's not our thing. And I totally don't mind that thought process because, like, look, we know that it's difficult to go over there. We know that it's going to be, challenging against a lot of the best guys in the world. But I think when you look at, certain situations, we definitely don't get enough credit for what we have done. You know what I mean? Like for what Alex did, winning as many races as he did. And, sometimes I think it's just overlooked because there are a lot of drivers over there as well. I don't know what it's going to take. I think honestly, what it's going to take is a massive investment from someone and an exciting young American talent. I mean, there still hasn't been any winners since me in F3 from America. So like, I'm trying to,
that's terrible.
I would love to see that. I would love to support any young American driver who goes over there and who does that because I want to see an American in Formula One without a doubt. But they're definitely not going to be looking at IndyCar for that just because it just hasn't happened in 30, 40 years.
It's such a shame because someone like Rossi who didn't have the best Formula One career in the world but went out to IndyCar and is killing it. He's done brilliantly in IndyCar. The guy's clearly got bags of talent. And it's a shame when you look at the likes of Carlin, who you've got experience with Carlin, obviously, British team that have gone out to IndyCar and have been welcomed with open arms and are now doing really well. It's really pleasing to see. And IndyCar has British drivers. They've welcomed the likes of Max with Carlin and others. And it's such a pity. I think F1 is not as bad as it was with F1 arrogance, but it definitely still exists. And I totally agree that American drivers have been overlooked. And people like, Scott Dixon, okay, he's not American, but he's racing in IndyCar. He's got to be one of the greatest racing drivers that many people who are an armchair fan in the UK have never heard of. And what sort of a travesty is that? I mean, how good is Scott? I mean, you've raced with him. How good is Scott Dixon?
Well, Scott's very good. He's very smart, but he's also, super, super, clean, everything about him, clean cut, very fit, good guy, great family. I think there are many drivers that would agree that, guys like willpower and qualifying could go up against Lewis Hamilton in qualifying. Willpower can do something so good in qualifying in an IndyCar, and you know, on the softer tires, you know, getting the lap out of it. Lewis Hamilton does those same thing in Formula One cars, right? Yeah. Like he's very good at qualifying. And I think Scott Dixon, I mean, there are obviously, you could think of hypothetical situations all day, but completely would agree that if there was ever somehow a head-to-head matchup, you know, put everyone in the Mercedes, right? You put Dixon in there, you put Newgarden in there, you put Rossi, you put any of us who are at the front, I truly believe there would be a little bit smaller of a gap than a lot of Formula One fans would think. But that's never going to happen, so we'll never find out.
But it's wish it would, because that is such an unpopular opinion, isn't it? I mean, if you took to Twitter with your sort of following and said, I think I could put me in that Mercedes and I'll equal or better Lewis Hamilton, for example. I mean, the Twitter British backlash would be unbearable.
Team LH would come for you.
Which, I mean, I'm not saying I would, obviously. I don't know that. Like, I think those guys, there obviously is a reason why, you know, they're in Formula One. I think there's obviously some of the best drivers in the world. But I do think, like, ask Fernando Alonso what it was like to come over and try the Indy 500. It's not, and everyone thinks also that ovals are very easy. Completely not true.
Well, so, I mean, testament, Max is obviously stepped aside for the ovals for a reason, because they're horrible.
Yeah. I mean, physically, mentally, everything about him is really challenging. And like, I love talking with Fernando about it, because Fernando was a hero of mine as a kid, obviously, and you know, one of the best drivers in the world without a doubt. And it's great to talk with him about it, because it's like, hey, he respects the difficulty, he respects the game that we've got going on over here. And I would love to see more, you know, F1 guys come over and try out at least the Indy 500. I think there will be more eventually.
Yeah.
But it was super cool to have Fernando. And again, you know, we're obviously going to be going head to head against him again this year, with the McLaren team, who have put a lot of money into that organization. Yeah, yeah. So I'm
cool. Let's hope it works.
Galando out there.
I mean, they've been competitive so far. So I think Fernando's going to be in really good shape for the 500 this year.
And it's interesting, actually, speaking about F1 drivers who come across. I mean, in the hypothetical world, I'd love to see in the IndyCar field and the F1 field do just like a swap for one weekend, just to see how it pan out. Never going to happen, but wouldn't that be amazing? But actually, you look at some F1 drivers that have come over, you look at the likes of someone like Marcus Ericsson as well, who didn't really have the most glittering of Formula One careers. Coming over, it's an IndyCar, putting in some, you know, solid results, learning, that kind of thing, but he's already doing better than he ever did in Formula One. So it's a wonder, it's interesting to compare the two types of car. We've done videos on trying to compare and explain IndyCar to a UK and European audience. How would you explain it to someone who knew about Formula One, but had only really ever heard that IndyCars just go around in circles? What would you say to someone?
Well, I think the easiest way to describe, right, is Formula One teams have, you know, well, with the newest budget cap, right, like 150 million euros is to spend on a season. You know, we go racing with $8 million, right? So that there's way less budget. And essentially the cars are in a category of a spec series. The chassis is the same that we get from Dallara. Everyone can have the same chassis. And now obviously the aerodynamic pieces are all the same as well. So what you get is a very, very close field. You know, the only thing that's open for development for us that like Formula One is our spring and damper package. So, you know, the teams can develop whatever they want in the dampers. They can do whatever they want with them, as long as they stay within, you know, as long as they're not obviously something ridiculous, as long as they fit on the Dallara chassis, you know, teams can essentially do whatever they want with the dampers. So, you know, we do have a lot of smart people, and there are some development items that we can do there. And that's where the Ganassis and the Penske's spend a little bit more than other people. Because they can, but it still gives an opportunity, like a small team like Carlin, a one car operation, to go out there and upset everyone and get the pole.
Yeah.
You know, we can do that. Whereas we're not going to see George Russell on pole. We're not going to see anyone and not a Mercedes be on pole this year. You know what I mean? That's something I think is really cool. I think that's what Marcus has really appreciated. I talk to Marcus all the time. He's a great guy. Yeah. Marcus is now with one of the best teams in IndyCar. And I think he's realizing, look, this is way more fun than he was having in F1. I can promise you that. And it's a very, very competitive series. You're looking at every piece technically, every piece driving wise, because you're only looking for hundredths of a second. You know, we're qualifying at the Grand Prix of Indianapolis. You know, we qualified eighth, but you missed the fast six by half a hundredth. You know what I mean? It's like, it's very, very small. Whereas Mercedes out qualifies everyone by a second, you know what I mean? So we have all 26 cars in within a second. So that's the difference.
And the only car that can get close to Mercedes is last year's copy, and that's still a second.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's just ridiculous.
Let's talk about that pole. So, it's been all over the press over here as well. Obviously with it being a British team and Trevor Carlin, what was that like getting pole?
It was awesome, man. Only because I'm a big team guy. I mean, I love all the work that these guys put into it. We can only do what we can do on track because of what they do every day in the shop, every day at the racetrack. I'm working longer hours than we are. So, to see the happiness on everyone's face, to see the engineers, obviously, because we had started together last year and it was tough for me. Like I knew that, we needed to do some work. We needed to get the car a little bit better, and a little bit more adjusted to my driving style. And they absolutely nailed it over the off season. They did exactly what they needed to do. A lot of work with the damper program that we sort of suggested. And I always say we, because it's a team effort. And that was, it was a really cool moment for Trevor. Trevor was in Budapest, obviously, with the F2 and F3 team. But he called me very late at night in Budapest, and it was just cool to hear him. I mean, they're still such a young team.
Yeah.
And again, as you said, we're the only one car team. And I think that was more impressive than anything. And I respect what Trevor's done. I would love to get them their first win, obviously, as well this year. We've got a couple more races to fight for that. So it'd be pretty cool to hopefully get them some more trophies as we go here.
It was amazing. And there's one thing that made me chuckle on your, I think you put it on your Twitter. And one thing that will baffle Formula One fans who don't know IndyCar that well, that you don't only race for Carlin, you race with Ed Carpenter Racing as well. And you were the other day where I think standing on the pit wall with your Carlin outfit on, looking at your Ed Carpenter Racing car across the way. How does that work? Is that weird?
Well, again, my career has been a wild ride, and it's the dumbest thing ever, really, for the most part. But I mean, my sponsor with the U.S. Air Force, we had only a certain amount of budget. And there was one situation where it worked, and that was Ed Carpenter Racing, because Ed obviously drives the ovals for his car, the 20 car, and he's not a road course guy. So, they usually have someone, the last couple of years at least, they've had someone come and drive the road and street courses for that 20 car, because if the 20 car does all the races, you get an extra $1 million or whatever from the series as a full-time entrant. So it's important to kind of keep those two full-time cars going the whole time. And then obviously, teams run extra cars, the Indy 500. So I become, the third car for the Indy 500. And then Trevor had asked me, look, we're still going to be here. Would you do the ovals for us? And I was like, well, guess what? That fits perfectly with the plan that I've got. So, and the only way it worked as well is because of Chevrolet, like both cars are Chevrolet engines. If it was a Honda and Chevy team, I don't think it would have worked. I have to thank both teams really for letting me do that. Ed knows that I want to be a full-time guy. Trevor knows that I want to be a full-time guy. Neither of us have enough budget to make that happen. So, we just got to make the best of the situation. And right now I think we definitely are.
In terms of points and things like that, that doesn't change anything. The point system is, how does that work when you collect points as a driver?
I could drive six different cars, but the driver still scores points. So like, there's car points and then there's driver points as well. So like, the car itself scores points no matter who the driver is. And then the driver scores points, whatever car he's driving.
So before we come on to our final few questions, I'm intrigued about the US Air Force relationship. You've got it there on your shirt and your cap. A very interesting sponsor, not necessarily a very traditional type of partnership, I guess. What's it all about?
Well, so they use it for recruiting, right? So there's a stat, like there's only really 2% of the Air Force are fighter pilots. So there's a lot of jobs available for young people coming out of school, to work in the United States Air Force. And that's why they do it. They show up at the races with some incredible displays on what type of career you can have in the Air Force. what you can do. And that's what it's all about. And we have incredible programs where we bring in kids from the U.S. Air Force Academy to work as, you know, interns on the race team. Obviously there's a lot of engineering. There's a lot of, you know, science, technology, engineering, math, everything that you want as you're kind of learning growing up, you know, there is in racing. So, and our car looks like a fighter jet. So that also helps.
Yeah, that's quite cool.
And they've done a great job. It's our third year together, which is really cool. Definitely the longest standing sponsor I've ever had. And it's obviously incredible. As you know, I'm a super passionate American, so to represent for some of the most, you know, some of the finest people that I've ever met, you know, in the Air Force, is really special for sure.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I think a very good sponsor to have on the side of your car and on your gear. What are you really crap at?
Sim racing and I would say terrible at water sports. I'm not a good water sports.
Well, are we talking like water polo or I don't
know? No, we don't even bother with that here in America. I'm not good at like wakeboarding, skiing, water skiing.
Oh, water skiing's a nightmare.
Yeah. Harry, you could do that without skis.
Very funny.
He's got huge feet, massive feet. So he's got. What's the equivalent in US? What's your US size?
So I think US is the size one size above UK. I think so. I'm a UK size 16, so I think that's a 17 over in the US.
Massive.
Oh wow.
Which I think is actually the one time I was able to buy shoes, I was in. So I've got American relatives, and they live in Florida. And we were in, I think, like some sort of, I think it's called a Nordstrom. We don't have
that.
Yeah. And they had a shoe area that it was all empty, and they had one little sort of little column at the end which just said size 16 to 20. There were four pairs of shoes, and they all fit me, and I bought them all. It was a great day. It was the best day of my life. Shoes I could actually fit. Anyway, digress completely. Connor, I want to know. We touched on this earlier. About your unorthodox career, I suppose. Is there anything you would change if you could?
The thing I get asked most is, do I regret going to Europe? And I would say no, still no. You know, if I hadn't got this year going, I would probably say, yeah, I regret it, because I look at what Joseph's doing and I know the trajectory that both of us were on, and I know who was winning more. And it was me at the time. So I was like, man, I don't know what, you know, Joseph is one of my closest friends, and the guy has developed, I think Joseph's path of development from where we were when we were 18 to where he is now is really impressive. It's a guy who has taken everything from what he's learned on the track and actually continued to improve and develop on basically, you know, what you always have to try and work on in motorsport are your weak areas, which are hard to do because you're like, I'm good at everything. But you're not. Like, you definitely have weak areas. And Joseph has become one of the most well-rounded drivers that I've ever seen. So I think that's the biggest question. I don't know what I would change now. I feel pretty good about where I've ended up. I really wanted to have a Lamborghini by the age of 21. That definitely did not happen.
Yeah, me neither.
So I had a lot of high goals set early on. But I'm pretty happy where I am now and still just grinding every day to try and be better.
Have you got anything? So you're fast in a race car. Fine. You mentioned people have weaknesses. People have other strengths. What are you really good at outside of racing? Have you got any hidden talents that the general public don't necessarily know about?
I don't know. Reality television. I've done a reality TV show. So, I mean, I can just be dumb and be pretty hilarious, I think, on a television.
What was it? Was it like Love Island or something like that?
No, I got offered that though. But it was a show called The Amazing Race here in America, which is a travel show all around the world. So that was I enjoyed that. I would definitely love to have a TV show of some kind or be a part of a TV show of some kind. I like making people laugh. That's what I want to try and do.
Do you think it's easier to be a bit more of a personality in IndyCar over in America than it is in Europe?
1,000,000%. Yeah. 1,000,000%. I think it's over there was a very tough lifestyle. Could not be who I wanted to be. Could not express myself, I guess, the way I wanted to. because I felt like I was constantly, even walking through the paddock, I felt like I was being judged for something. So, you know, it's tough. I literally see it in all these F2 and F3 drivers interviews, and I see it in the way people are on social media. Everything is the same. And I'm like, look, you guys got to be yourselves. Like, I know plenty of drivers who are so funny, who are so like great away from the track. And the perfect example of someone who is enjoying his life, who is himself, and who is doing everything right is Lando Norris.
Yeah.
And that guy, I think, is the exact example to anyone. As long as you're good on the track, you can be yourself away from the track. Like, do it. It will not hurt you. It will only, the guy's Twitch channel, he is making so much money off of that extra on the side, because all he does is just be himself and does it.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
So
on top of the millions from McLaren.
Yeah, but he's been a breath of fresh air, isn't he? I mean, it would never have happened in the Ron Dennis days, but, you know, it's a very different place now, and it's great to see him with so much personality, and even Carlos, you know, the two of them together are quite funny.
I love Carlos. Carlos is one of my best friends coming out of GP3. I think I still talk to him most, and we traded helmets. I've got one of his helmets downstairs in the living room. But yeah, like Lando is definitely, I think, the most entertaining driver in Formula One, other than like Daniel Ricciardo and Max. Honestly, well, Max, I know more away from the public eye, but like those guys are really entertaining young talents. And I think it's like, I'm like, please, can we have more of this? Can someone figure this out? Like Charles Leclerc as well, what he was doing over the whole, you know, quarantine thing. Him being streaming racing, I mean, I'm like, yep, this is exact. Now I want to be a Formula One fan again. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But it's him, Albon, Leclerc, Russell, Lando,
Verstappen. George has been
hopefully
good.
This new wave of driver and the youth will hopefully then that will seep into the rest of the paddock and the way, even from the way it's broadcast, hopefully that will just make it a bit more IndyCar like. Who'd have thought we'd be saying that?
There is still the old guard though that are like, oh, you know, why has he got a banana outfit on? How ridiculous. You know, this is Formula One. You know, it's like, oh, come on. It's lighten up a little bit.
I agree.
it's a sport, and it's entertainment at the end of the day. And that's what we want, entertainment on and off track. And that can only be a good thing if it gets more eyes onto them.
We have so many things that can capture our attention now with the internet, right?
Yeah.
It's like, motor racing used to be obviously, well, this is the wildest stuff we can see on television because these guys are insane doing 200 plus miles an hour, driving, you know, driving into each other and driving all over the world. But now there's the internet and there are so many things that can be entertaining. And there are so many different outlets on television. So it's like, well, racing's got to step up our game. We got to have some electric personalities. We got to have some people that want to keep you entertained all the time. It can't just be like, well, I'd like to thank sponsors, thank the team.
Yeah, which it still is.
Day. Still
is.
See you later.
Couldn't agree more. Listen, we have three final quickfire questions for you. Harry, would you want to kick off?
Yeah, Connor, what's got you excited at the moment?
Pretty much Call of Duty Warzone every day. That's about it. Continue to play it. We'll continue to play until...
Are you actually any good?
I actually don't think I'm that bad. Me and Lando have played a couple times. Lando's not bad either, but he's focused on being in a streaming empire, and he's, you know, a little bit focused on that, which is important.
Brilliant.
Presumably you're on Twitch. You've got a channel people can go to.
Twitch.tv/ConnorDaily22. And I'm just ConnorDaily22 on everything. So my number's not 22 in anything, but it used to be. So I'm just
fair enough. If not doing what you're doing, what would you be doing?
You know, I get asked that all the time. I would just try and do TV. Like, I would love to be a part of like a TV show, be an actor, or be something like that. Don't know if I'd want to go to school for anything like that, but just throw me on the set and see what happens. Who knows? But reality TV, anything like that, I would definitely do it. Or, I mean, obviously, if it has to do a little bit with motorsport, I like to commentate. I'd love to commentate on motorsport.
Well, it seems like a logical path as well. Final question for you, Connor. What are you scared of?
Spiders.
Mm-hmm.
And not making it. Like when it comes to, you know, a reality without motorsport, that's a real deep fear. You know what I mean? What is that? But realistically, hilariously, spiders and not a snake guy. Don't like snakes.
No, I don't like snakes.
So if anyone ever classes himself as a snake guy, then I don't want to meet that person.
I'm not a snake guy either.
That's weird.
Can I ask my weird question? Chloe's
one. Go for it.
I just like it. Would you rather be covered in scales or feathers, and why?
Well, feathers, hopefully, because I could fly. Huh. I want to fly. Sounds great. I mean, if I'm a feathery creature, I better be up there in the skies flying around a lot.
You might not be able to fly. It might be like penguin feathers. Do penguins have feathers?
Well, you didn't limit it. You said feathers or scales, and I said, put me in the air. I've got feathers.
You just took it there. You didn't even hesitate. Yeah. Now I'm wondering if penguins even have feathers. I'm not sure. They're more like oily. Anyway, I'm getting carried away.
Anyway, Connor Daly, thank you so much for joining us on the Motormouth podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure. Before we let you go, when can we see you racing next for a UK and Europe-based, you don't quite know the IndyCar calendar. When's the next racing for you?
So August 8-9 weekend, we have a doubleheader at Mid-Ohio, two road course races, and then after that's the Indianapolis 500.
Yes,
so
August
500, obviously our premier event. So that it'll be a really exciting month of August for us, for sure.
I can't wait.
We wish you massive, massive luck for the rest of the season, Connor. Connor Daly, thank you for coming on the Motormouth podcast.
Thanks, Connor.
Awesome. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter @Motormouth_, Instagram @Motormouth_official, and on Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can download the Motormouth app where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile and interact with others, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.